Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics. And due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Three, two, one. Now live from the heart of liberal Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Best friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Now here are your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, Dominic, the Friday edition, and it doesn't feel quite right because you've joined me here on the airwaves, and it's a Friday, but I commend you, you know, full five-day work week.
It's been a long week. It is.
It's grueling, and we are rejoined by one of our favorite guests. He is former U.S. Attorney James Hantel, friend of ours. James, welcome back to the big show.
Hey, Jim.
Mike, good to be back with you once again. A day that apparently is not seeing the reinstatement of Donald Trump as the president, but we've got a couple hours left.
Yeah, the day is not yet over,
Jim. He said it would be in the morning.
Mike Lindell said morning. That's what I thought, too. I was waiting.
You know, I woke up early. I set my alarm. Couldn't wait. You know, I thought it would be something of a dramatic change. But here's what I did wake up to today. Mark Elias, a lawsuit in the state of Wisconsin, didn't even wait 24 hours from the census data dropping to file a lawsuit to try and pull the redistricting process into the federal courts. And just as importantly, as far as I was concerned, Jim, trying to make it absolutely clear to the federal courts that we cannot possibly use the last maps again. Have you had a chance to review the lawsuit of Mark Elias? What'd you think?
Right. And so this is just dropping today again within about 24 hours after the United States Census Bureau drops its figures on Wisconsin and the rest of the nation. So it's significant in terms of its timing because those figures are the ones on which this kind of lawsuit and plainly others to follow will be based. The lawsuit is certainly preemptive in the sense that there has not yet been a decision made, obviously, about how we use those figures and the lines to be drawn in congressional districts. But it does certainly indicate a very aggressive and forward-looking movement. And substantively, as you indicated, sort of suggests that the old days should not be revisited. My concern about the lawsuit, I think of others, is just the issue of there being a case in controversy. We don't yet know what it is that's going to happen here. And I think the lawsuit, in fairness to it, reflects that, says that the federal court should be prepared to step in the near certain event that the political branches fail timely to do their own work. And so it is preemptive in that sense. I think it is subject to some attack, if you will, based upon the lack of a case or controversy, perhaps even standing up to this point. But again, the first foray in what's going to be a whole series of these lawsuits as this information now goes forward and we begin to do this line drawing in the next months and years, undeniably going to end up in the courts.
Well, Jim, I saw a number of litigants that would have standing in that, according to the new math, and the maps drawn way back in 2010, 2011, well, at that time, the variance permissible between congressional districts, state senate districts, assembly districts was one voter. And now with these new census data, we know that the second congressional district where I live, primarily Dane County, well, that's exploded in population. There is a 94,000 citizen variance. You're supposed to have one citizen, one vote. Under the 14th Amendment, I believe his claims. And above and beyond that, Jim, with the rapidly approaching spring sign up for running for office timeframes, he said, well, you know, historically speaking, our friends Tony Evers and the Republicans, they won't get it done in time. And if you cannot constitutionally utilize the prior maps, well, then you got to step in to make sure the timeline is fair under the First Amendment Article 2 to the candidates that might want to run for an office and they wouldn't even know what area is represented by that office.
And that's the very compelling argument that they make, basically that the TikTok, right? We can't wait anymore. We've seen this play before. We've seen this game before. And we can't wait until the last minute to run into district courts and perhaps even get up to the Supreme Court and get these suddenly emergency orders issued in this litigation. That is messy. That's messy government. It's not what our founders intended. So to that extent, absolutely. This is an attempt once again to get the federal courts in place. Your description of the interaction between amendments to the Constitution is just like we're sitting once again in law school. You've got it just right. And that's the claim, that because of these problems in the past, the voters of America, the voters in the state of Wisconsin, should have a fair shot at knowing what the districts are. The census information is now out there. Federal court, step in, take control of this, and begin that process. Again, undeniably going to be the first in many lawsuits filed here. But again, I would not indicate, because of my concerns about case of controversy and standing, not to indicate that this is a frivolous lawsuit by any means. These are the kinds of things upon which these arguments are going to be made, simply that perhaps the legislature, and at least there should be some attempt by our political factions to make a first stab. I don't hold out a whole lot of hope as that they're going to do this in a timely fashion. So good to have this on file, if nothing more, for the injunctive action that needs to come soon.
Jim Crudy's just trying to brag because he actually read the court documents. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, joining us. Always a pleasure. I want to move on to the testimony. Department of Justice, Jeffrey Rosen, gave testimony to the Inspector General of the Department of Justice on Friday for a couple hours. On Saturday, spoke to the Senate Judiciary Committee, I believe, for 7 hours. And then more, I believe, even on Sunday. I mean, there's 15, 16 hours of testimony given by Rosen. What does that tell you, Jim?
It tells me there's a lot of things to say, right? And some of it could be repetitive. Obviously, it's appearing from different groups, different folks who are looking at these issues, all of them related to this period between the election in November of last year and what happened into January. We get more and more reporting all the time. Now we've got this report that, among other things, the former president reached out to the Department of Justice, probably daily, between the time of the election and the time that he left, and was advocating for a 54-page complaint that the Department of Justice should file, perhaps with the United States Supreme Court directly, which is curious, along the Texas lines, challenging the election. Rosen once again saying, no merit here. Everybody else saying the same thing. This, again, in the wake of all the Jeffrey Clark stuff that we have talked about before, the letter that was going to be written to members of Congress saying, you do your part, we'll do ours. All of this, as we talked last time, not only serious, I do think you can put together a viable argument that what Jeff Rosen is testifying about, we've got former U.S. Attorney Pack from the Northern District of Georgia, we've got the former acting deputy attorney general, all of them talking about all of these relationships. We talked before about a criminal conspiracy, an attempt to overthrow the results of the election. I do think, along with many other people who are looking at this again through media, that there's a basis for pursuing criminal investigation here. This is the kind of thing that is not simply, again, more of Donald Trump doing and saying outrageous things. This is the kind of thing that should be the subject of a criminal investigation to determine whether or not crimes were committed. And I hope that Merrick Garland is not only looking at all this, but also taking it in and assigning someone in the criminal division, a public integrity division, to take a look at all this very seriously, including the involvement of the former president.
So to reiterate, Jim, if you were the acting attorney general and at the charge of the Department of Justice, you have seen enough in the public file right now to at least start a criminal investigation into the former president.
I would open up the file. Absolutely. Again, it's not saying we're going to indict. We do this all the time. You do not need to have proof beyond a reasonable doubt at the time that you open up a file. You've got to have more than just a hunch. You can't be based upon political animosity. This is not that. We certainly have an awful lot of indication. All of these stories, I've just indicated one or two of them that we now know about that have made it into the media. 7 hours of testimony before congressional committees, others that he's talking to, as you said, the Inspector General. There are other. He's talked about a lot of communications between the Department of Justice and this president. again, on a regular basis. I would certainly open up the file to determine what we should do next, who should we should subpoena, and what kinds of documents we should be going after as well.
Jim, also in Trump's circle, the Dominion lawsuit's allowed to move forward. Apparently, we have Rudy Giuliani now offering, you know, videos for a couple hundred bucks for you, and we have Mike Lindell lamenting this live on his stage at the Cyber Symposium, telling how this is ruining everyone's First Amendment rights. What was your take on that, and what are the chances of Dominion getting a $1 billion settlement?
They may not get $1 billion, but kudos to Dominion for being very aggressive and responding to the kinds of, forgive me, just plain craziness that Lindell and plainly Rudy Giuliani and others have espoused in recent months. My favorite quote, perhaps of the week, Lindell is on the stage at his own symposium and says, you can get sued for everything now. Well, the irony is dripping, right, Mr. Lindell? And of course, what we have here, the substantive issue is we've got a Judge Carl Nichols, who was a Trump appointee, for what it's worth, to the district court in D.C., saying, no, I'm not dismissing this lawsuit that Dominion has brought against this defamation lawsuit against the Mike Pillow guy, against Sidney Powell, the attorney, and Rudy Giuliani, alleging that when they said that Dominion was involved in providing faulty election equipment, undermining the process of counting, that's defamation. So the judge basically says Powell and others can't shield themselves from their liability for their widely disseminated out-of-court statements by simply saying that, oh, these are things I said in court, therefore I'm protected by them. Again, among my favorite things that the judge said about Lindell, says, in addition to alleging that Lindell's claims are inherently improbable, his sources are unreliable, he has failed to acknowledge the validity of countervailing evidence, Dominion has alleged numerous instances in which Lindell told audiences to purchase MyPillow products after making his claims of election fraud and providing MyPillow promotional codes. This is not a credible lawsuit. The judge is saying, basically, this is a credible lawsuit. Your claims are not credible in the opposite direction. We're going ahead with this. We're going ahead to trial on the defamation lawsuit. We'll figure out the money down the road.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got the finest of guests and friends. He is James Santel, former U.S. attorney. And when we come back, I'm going to ask all the questions Dom left out. More Devil's Advocates. When I come around.
Will there be a lawsuit? Yeah, probably.
I will pay for the legal fees, I promise.
No, you don't.
The courts agree with us, too. What's going on in this country?
The Devil's Advocates. Political commentary from the back of the class.
We are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. If you miss any of this fine program, please go online to devilradio927.com. You can listen to and download podcasts and interviews.
Dominic, we've got the finest of guests, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Appreciate you sticking around, Jim. Now, let me get to a couple of the important questions that have been left out so far. We sort of jumped forward without acknowledging the pressure being exerted on the U.S. attorney from Georgia, Pack, BJ Pack, I believe his nickname. And Pack resigned under pressure. I believe it was January 3rd, right before the insurrection. Now, Jim, we've talked about the pressure being exerted by the president on top levels of Justice Department officials. He had a co-conspirator in Jeffrey Clark, perhaps. But does this additional pressure, this new news we learned about the U.S. attorney and the resignation under pressure because he wouldn't assert fraud on behalf of the president, Jim, does this perhaps raise to a differing level of criminality on behalf of the former president?
It certainly adds to it, right? If this is one of the additional things we put on the list of concerns that we have about all these things that happened between the election and the time that Donald Trump finally left office. And so, again, Mr. Pack has testified as well, we know, and plainly he resigned at a time when all these things we now know were percolating up. The very strong surmise is that his own activity was because he had enough integrity to say, I'm not going to go along with whatever it is the White House is proposing, probably tipped off by the then Deputy Attorney General to say, this is what's coming in your direction, a request from the president to do something with respect to Georgia. And he probably said, no, I'm not doing that, and resigned. Now, does the president have the capacity to fire any United States attorney? The answer is yes. My own appointment from Barack Obama has his name on it. So you can do that. But you don't pressure someone, whether it's directly or indirectly, to resign based upon a request, implicit or explicit, to engage in what, again, I think is criminal conduct, which is undermining election process, engaging in this conspiracy to change the votes in Georgia. Apparently, we don't know yet, but apparently PAC, again, had the integrity to say, I will have no part of this. I am leaving. And again, we will find out at some point what exactly he has said in this past weekend or so, these past several days. My strong sense is that we're going to find another person like Jeffrey Rosen, who was pushing back and finally said, I cannot go along with what this administration, coming out of Donald Trump's voice directly or indirectly, is asking me to do.
Jim, we can't expect the Fulton County DA to prosecute this crime in Georgia. We would love to celebrate Merrick Garland Week in the week he drops federal indictments on Donald Trump for his actions regarding the big lie and the trying to persuade Georgia election officials, etc. Jim, that would be a great week. But don't you think it's imperative on the Department of Justice to step forward? You can't rely upon the resources of an individual county in Georgia to prosecute a former president.
We do know, again, that the DA there in Fulton County has an active grand jury investigation, issued subpoenas, people coming in, and that goes ahead. We have not heard a lot about that, but that could still happen. But those would be state charges. I think our conversation today is going in the right direction, which is there is a strong federal interest in this matter as well. Aggravated by all these things that we have seen recently, I have very little doubt that inside of this Department of Justice and the Criminal Division, Public Integrity Section, at the highest levels, Lisa Monaco, others inside the Department of Justice, all of this is a subject of daily discussion, examination, probably lots of memorandums being written, which is what we do a lot of, because you want to get it right, and you don't want to do something that is subject later on to being attacked because you didn't cross all the T's and dot all the I's. My guess is they are doing that right now and making this tough determination about whether or not we do in fact have enough to indict a former president federally, perhaps others as well. Jeffrey Clark comes to mind, others as well. That is no small thing to do. We've never done that in the history of our nation. But my sense is that at a minimum, again, to answer Dom's question, that file needs to be open now. And we need to be having those very serious, grave questions, grave discussions, leading to some presentations to a grand jury.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, for just a few more minutes. Jim, before we get to Trump's tax returns, former U.S. attorney P.J. Pax, when he resigned, did that give him a different legal position than if he were waited to be fired?
Right. It does, just because it obviously indicates you're doing this on your own volition. You're not the subject of firing. On the other hand, it doesn't necessarily mean that it puts you in a different spot with respect to your own testimony. And again, you're still subject to a subpoena. Plainly, the Department of Justice has said, we'll let all these people come forward and testify. And so whether he's a private citizen who has resigned of his own volition or been terminated by the president, neither one of those with respect to testimony makes a difference. But it certainly does in the public domain kind of carry a different sense of what happened here. We look forward to hearing exactly what Mr. Pack says and did during this period of time when he was, again, at the focus of the president's ire, if you will, what's going on in Georgia at the time.
All right, Jim, last 90 seconds. Trump's tax returns, at least some of them, are going to get handed off to Congress. What do you expect we will find, sir?
Sure. We've got a couple of things going on. We've got one hearing coming up in November on the House Ways and Means Oversight Committee. Recently got some good news out of a judge saying you can turn over some portions of it related to the Emoluments Clause, early times. This will begin to come forward, not nearly as quickly as Mike would want, but we're going to get those at some point, indicating they're not fighting this hard to keep something out of the public domain that is not favorable to the former president.
What about the special investigator, special counsel Durham? Apparently he's presenting evidence to grand juries. Jim, 30 seconds. Are you concerned we're going to have a big red herring drop?
You know, that could be. Durham, again, has usually been traditionally sort of a traditional guy. We've seen that before. We hope that even if he is presenting evidence, that in the end his report comes back and says there's nothing to see here. And if we do get a red herring drop, we'll be talking again and talking about the impact of that kind of a thing on the public's impression about what did and did not happen in the election. I hope that doesn't happen.
James Santel, our fine guest, always leaves him wanting more. Come back someday soon, Jim. More Devil's Advocates. The rest of you better come back after this short break.
Thanks, Jim.
Always a pleasure.
Communism is just a red herring.
By the time August 3rd, the morning of...